weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Betty De Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, September 19th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Bernard Jackman previews the new URC season that kicks off this weekend. Paul Corrie and Rebecca Cray chat football in a busy week of Champions League action. Plus, we'll look ahead at the Women's FAI Cup semi-finals as well as the new WSL season. Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America with the latest NFL news, and we shall wrap up all of today's sports headlines. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Before we get into chatting football and chatting rugby, a couple of news headlines to rattle off. Starting with golf and the opening round of the BMW PGA Championship in Wentworth. England's Matthew Baldwin leads by one on 7 under par. Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry both carded 67s and are just 2 strokes back on 5 under. Tom McKibben is 2 under after a 70. Padraig Harrington carded a 71 for 1 under, while Sean Thornton is 2 over after a 74. Leona Maguire is tied for 2nd place, 1 shot off the lead at the Queen City Championship in Ohio. The Cavan woman is 5 under through 13, 1 behind the leader, Ashley Buhai of South Africa. Elsewhere in Gaelic games, All-Ireland champions Armagh have 11 All-Star nominations, with Barry McCambridge nominated for the Footballer of the Year award. There are 11 counties represented among the 45 nominees, with All-Ireland finalist Galway taking 8 spots, while Ulster champions Donegal have 7. McCambridge is the All-Ireland winner, sole contender for the Footballer of the Year award, going up against Galway duo of Paul Conroy and John Marr. All-Ireland final man of the match, Oisín Conaghy, is shortlisted for Young Footballer of the Year alongside Galway's man-marking cornerback Johnny McGrath and Donegal defender Kieran Moore. Last year's finalists Dublin and Kerry have 4 All-Star nominations apiece, as do surprise quarterfinalists Loud, who have mustered a record haul with Sam Mulroy, Tommy Dernan, Craig Lennon and Donal McKenney all earning nominations. Connacht neighbours Mayo and Roscommon have 2 nominations apiece, with Aidan O'Shea and Ryan O'Donoghue selected for Kevin McStay's side, while Brian Stack and Dermot Murta are nominated for the Rossies. For Cork, Daniel O'Mahony is the sole nominee, while Dara Canavan and Niall Morgan are in the running for Tyrone. In association football then, the Republic of Ireland have dropped 4 places to 62nd in the FIFA World Rankings after their back-to-back UEFA Nations League losses to England and Greece. Ireland's lowest ever ranking position came in June 2014 when they sank to 70th in October. Hogginson's charges face away trips to Greece, 48th in the rankings, and Finland, 64th. Argentina remain the top-ranked team in the world ahead of France, European champions Spain, England and Brazil. Belgium, the Netherlands, Portugal, Colombia and Italy make up the top 10. Before I move on to the next news headline, Rebecca Cray and Paul Corrie with us, because I might be teasing out this one with you guys. Rebecca, how are you?
I'm good, Shane. How are you?
Good. Paul, how's the form?
Yeah, very well, Shane.
Good, good. These football story, and again, it's kind of the ongoing saga and the latest twist in it for Dundalk football players. Well, they will not be paid this week, with new owner John Temple claiming they need time to make the necessary arrangements, resulting in the delay. The Lily Whites were taken over by a consortium headed by Temple on Tuesday, avoiding bankruptcy and the prospect of a club folding by a matter of hours. The players previously suffered a delay in being paid before their defeat to St Pat's on September 5th. That was remedied when the FAI assisted now former owner Brian Ainscough with the advance of prize money. This week's pay will not arrive in time, but the new owner has committed to all salaries up until November 30th, which is the end of the season, or the last month of the season as well, the season finishing up a bit beforehand. The club's first team squad had offered to defer wages when Dundalk were seeking investment. RTE Sport understands Temple has given assurances it is simply a delay and the wages will be paid. The Oriel Park outfit faced Sligo Rovers on Saturday in the Premier Division, seeking a positive result in the attempt to avoid relegation to the First Division. The reason I wanted to bring yourself in, Rebecca and Paul, with your former footballers' hats on. Rebecca, I don't think it affected you in your career as such, but Paul, you went through a similar but different, situation with Northampton.
Yeah, I did, Shane. I had to actually kind of Google there to see what year it was, but it was back in 2015 when I was at Northampton Town. Chris Wilder was the manager at the time, and in the month of October, HMRC, so the equivalent of revenue here in Ireland, issued a winding up order of the club. Now, we were going very strong at the time, probably somewhat different to Dundalk and being down the bottom of the table. We were top of the league, going very strong, and it actually galvanised the squad. It brought us all a bit closer together in the sense of being a unit and just trying to weather through a storm. And there was, potential owners around the corner. They actually had to sell Ivan Toney at the beginning of the season just to paper over the cracks. But we had good players in that squad. Dominic Calvert-Lewin was on loan from Sheffield United. And luckily enough, the takeover went through and we went on to win the league by a record number of points in League Two that year under Chris Wilder.
Mm.
So probably a little different to the Dundalk situation. I would intend to give the new owner the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. This isn't doom and gloom. This isn't like crisis. Oh my God, Dundalk fans, be worried. He has stated that this is just a temporary delay.
Yeah, but I would like to understand, where does this ownership model see themselves taking the club? Is it just to, get them to the end of the season and then hope that somebody new comes in and takes over the club? But I would imagine that the players are probably a little more reassured this time around than when the delays in the payments happened a couple of weeks back. So it's difficult. They're down the bottom of the league. It probably feels like nothing's going right for them at this moment in time. You would just hope, I guess, from a Dundalk fans' perspective, that it's not going to impact the performances, because they need points, Shane. They desperately need points, and the way Drogheda are going at the moment, they are picking up far more than Dundalk.
You mentioned it galvanised you guys. Might that be not taking away from the situation and the character, I suppose, of that squad and that group? And you must be a really together and closely knit group as well. But might it be easier to galvanise when you're going for a league title as opposed to
100%
relegation?
And in fairness to Chris Wilder, he was very good at that. Chris Wilder probably wasn't the most hands-on manager I had on the training ground. Don't get me wrong, he was there and he got involved, but he was very much that sort of figurehead within the dressing room. And he was the one that was rallying players to, see us through these next couple of weeks. I assure you that wages will be paid. We just need to focus on our league form and getting out of this division. And he did that very, very well. So you would imagine John Daly's trying to echo some of those sentiments to try, get the players behind the club and try see them out over the next couple of games, because it's a really vital part of the season for Dundalk. If you think about new ownership and the potential of investors coming in at the end of the season, it's far easier to back a team that's in the Premier Division than it is in the First Division. It's not an easy sell to kind of position Dundalk with the infrastructure that's there and say, listen, these are the teams you're going to be playing, these are the attendances you're going to be bringing in. That's a difficult sell. I think if you remain in the Premier Division, and if you look, like, the majority of times 4 out of the 10 teams get European football, that's 40% of the league. So if you're a new owner, you could say, okay, we're still in this division, we could potentially bring in and recruit a couple of new players and non-playing staff and have a right go at it next year. That's a far more attractive proposition for any potential investor. So these next couple of weeks are so crucial to that club.
Yeah, very much so. Rebecca, thankfully you didn't have to play under any financial crisis in your playing career.
No, we just didn't see any finances at all.
Different times, Rebecca, different times.
It has to be quite deflating as a footballing team. You just want to go out there and focus on training and games every week, and that just be your sole worry. But obviously with players, with families trying to function, day to day, week to week, it has to be quite disheartening. But as Paul said, look, I think it's times like these when leaders truly stand up, and obviously gather the troops to keep going and pushing on to the end of the season. So look, hopefully for the sake of them and the club and the fans, they do so.
Yeah. Just to read out a comment really from John Temple, that was furnished to us by Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent. The viability of the club rests on getting behind it now and seeing if it's worthwhile. I mean, if the club is not viable by the end of that season, we will have a look at it with the other investors. I know that if it's not viable, it's just not viable. The day of the truth will set upon us, and that's just this. I don't want that for Dundalk, and I've tried. I mean, I've staved off the execution, but the daggers are growing and hanging over every hour.
That's grim. Mm.
I mean, if I was a Dundalk fan, I'm... Like, and even before that quote that's come from Tony, and that's verbatim, word for word, basically, which is what the quote was. Even before that, it was all signs were pointing towards, we'll get to the end of the season, we'll get this covered, and then it's see what happens next. But when you hear something like that,
yeah, that's not great.
A bit.
Yeah, that's not great, and that's not, I guess, what Dundalk fans want to hear, but at least it lays out you know, the new ownership's intentions, and they are literally just a stopgap for the club at the moment, Shane. Mm. Yeah, it's desperately going to need somebody to come in with a lot of money to steady the ship there. And this would, like, this isn't something that's going to go away over the next couple of weeks or months. This is going to be an ongoing situation until that fresh ownership or a fresh investment comes in. And it's very worrying times, very, very worrying times to Dundalk.
Very worrying indeed, and really, I suppose, emphasises even more your point about how crucial it is to maintain Premier Division status. Mm. Before you move on to rugby, just to update our listeners on the ongoing Champions League matches and the early kickoffs, Feyenoord are trailing at home to Bayer Leverkusen 1-0, and Benfica are also in the lead away from home there in Belgrade against Red Star, 1-1 in that one as well. Florian Wirtz with the early goal for Leverkusen in the 5th minute. And Benfica taking the lead early on as well.
Probably surprise somebody didn't take a shot or take a punt off Ertz, yeah.
Mm.
Maybe it was the valuation that they put on him, but he's been absolutely superb in that Leverkusen team.
Yeah.
And I guess typically with the top German players, you sometimes just expect that they'll end up at Bayern Munich.
But you would imagine. Maybe just playing for the love of it. Could have Leverkusen tattooed on his calf for all I know. I doubt it, but yeah, no, it is a very valid point. Paul, you're going to keep an eye on that, as are you, Rebecca, and then we will be chatting all of the Champions League, looking back on Celtic's big win. We'll hear from Liam Scales, look ahead to Arsenal and everything else this evening, and indeed look forward to two cracking cup semi-finals this weekend and the start of the WSL season, all to look forward to a little bit later on.
Game on. Rugby.
But we're chatting rugby now, and Bernard, actually, we might continue our conversation really from the Dundalk story. Have you ever been involved in any rugby clubs where there was a financial crisis hanging, looming over your head?
Unfortunately, I spent more time in clubs with a financial crisis looming than I did in clubs that were in a good place. Yeah, well, I was in Connacht when the RFU threatened to close it down, and supporters and players marched on Lands End Road in Grenoble. Our benefactor unfortunately passed away, and we had to ask players to take a 10% pay cut. They refused, and it looked like we were going to go into administration. We ended up selling players and to try and balance the books. And then in Wales, in fairness to the Dragons had been hours from going into administration, and the Welsh Rugby Union bought them to save them, and I came in after that. But it was early days, and they still hadn't worked out the funding model. So there was, I remember one time that we were going to a match, and the bus didn't turn up, but it wasn't because they forgot about it. It was because they were owed so much money that they tried to, I suppose, put a bit of pressure on, and they only came when we gave a credit card payment. So, wow. Yeah, and I was listening to a BBC podcast this morning about rugby, and they're interviewing a fellow called Steve Diamond, who's coaching Newcastle. He used to coach me in Sale, and you know, he was at Worcester there last year when they went out of business, obviously London Irish and Wasps. So it's not unique to football by any manner or means, and unfortunately, yeah, a lot of clubs are they just, you need a benefactor who's willing to, I suppose, pay off any debt that's occurred in a regular season.
Yeah, that is, I think, the concerning thing in the League of Ireland as well, that there's a lot of clubs relying on benefactors, and as you outlined there, this isn't just one sport issue. It could easily go awry for football clubs and indeed rugby clubs, and you've listed out, I didn't know actually you were involved so heavily in all these clubs.
Bringing back nightmares for me, but anyway, it's good to talk. Yeah.
Must have been some wages, Bernard.
They weren't mine. No, in actual fact, the French, I like the French model. So the French model, we effectively, what you do is you have to propose your budgets before the new season. Obviously, you've got your off-field and on-field spending. Most of your costs are your players and your staff. And the financial regulators for the rugby in France, they basically have a really deep look at those projected figures in terms of sponsorship, ticket sales, TV money, etc., and they decide whether you actually are a solvent business. Okay, and if you are, they give you your license, and that license only lasts a year. And what happened was, we, as I said, our one of our benefactors passed away after we had our license. But you're pretty much locked in. The only place you can really save significant money is players, and you know, if we had got the players to take that 10% pay cut, we would have been back on track. But because they refused, we had no option but to sell players and sell a lot of our good young players as well. So, but it meant that we couldn't carry debt from one season to the next. So if you look at what happened with Worcester, London Irish and Wasps, it wasn't really the short-term losses that cost them. It was debt that had built up over 10, 15, 20 years that they were never really going to be able to get out of. So that, because of this regulation in France, very few clubs go out of business. You know, you can get relegated one division, which we were close. If you get administration, you automatically you get relegated two divisions. But in general, a saviour or a small investment is found to basically get you back in the good books and to be able to get your licence for the second year. And then obviously over time, you know, the following year, then you potentially can reduce your cost by not re-signing or recruiting expensive players. But it's when you have that blip mid-season, you know, those players have contracts. It's very difficult to drastically reduce the expenditure when valid contracts are signed by both parties.
Okay. That is actually genuinely very, very interesting in the insight in that regard. Thankfully, we're going into the new URC season. We're not concerned about any clubs going out of business that I'm aware of anyway. So, Bernie Jackman, what are you most looking forward to seeing in this upcoming new URC season?
I'm looking forward to starting this weekend. I think Munster-Connacht is a great first fixture. There's lots of different angles. I mean, Munster for the last two seasons have had incredibly bad starts and have kind of put themselves in a really bad position and found a way to one win it and then second last year get a home semi final. But obviously they'll be very disappointed losing to the eventual winners Glasgow. But again, a lot of the problems early doors for them was really bad injury lists and you know they would hope that the third season together. And players being more accustomed to the way they change, how they're going to train, etc., will have them more robust. And you know, if they can get a decent start, you know, they could be contenders. Connacht have, you know, they've got Mac Hansen back. They've Santiago Cordero, who missed most of the season last year. He was their kind of X factor foreign player signing. They've got some really good players coming through the academy. The likes of the Devine brothers, Hugh Gavin, etc. They could be interesting people because I think it's taken on back more of a role with the defence. And, you know, that was an area of weakness for them last year. And then Ulster, obviously, you know, Richie Murphy, his first head coach role with a pro side in Ireland, obviously he's vastly experienced, got a bump straight away last year and a bounce out of their performances when he came in. Just after the Six Nations, got them into the playoffs. He's working on a reduced budget, but he has brought some really good young players through, players that he worked with the Irish in their 20s, and has signed some exciting young talent from Leinster Academy as well, including his own son, Ben Murphy, in half, Jack Murphy, in half, is very talented. Ben Murphy has gone to Connacht as a scrum half from the Leinster Academy. So, and then obviously Leinster, that's the one. They're the ones that are probably the biggest underachievers in terms of silverware. Incredibly consistent, incredibly high win ratio and during the season for the last three or four seasons, but then knockout rugby have just come up short. And they're the ones who have been the most ambitious and the most aggressive in the off-season in terms of the recruitment and bringing in Rabah Slimani, the French prop from Clermont, to replace Michael Alatoa, and then obviously the two big ones, RG Simon from Munster and Jordy Barrett, the All Black. I mean, that is impressive. And Leinster haven't been as aggressive in the transfer market in terms of like more than one player, probably back since 2008 summer when Leinster signed Rocky Elsom, Ethan Asiwa, and CJ Van Linde, the Springbok. Prop all in one off season, and obviously they won a European Cup at the end of that season. So I think they've been quite cautious. I think if you look at the quality of the foreign players they've signed over the last 4 or 5 years, there hasn't been that. There's been good signings, but not you know, not signings to take your breath away. And I think they've done that this summer, and it probably ramps up the pressure on them. To be honest, certainly in the URC, I mean, to go another season without winning the URC, would be very hard to stomach. But realistically, you know, Europe is where the squad really will judge themselves, and that's not going to be easy, because particularly Toulouse, I think this Toulouse team are a generational side, so you know, Leinster could be better and still struggle to beat them, but there is pressure on Leinster, I think, to finish the season with a trophy. And well, watching that unfold is going to be fascinating. And then, you know, they pick the team tomorrow night, which is early days, but it's a fascinating selection, because you have, you know, experienced players alongside some of that young talent that I suppose I personally have seen come through playing schools, you know, and then under 20s, and now they're starting to get their chance in a pro game with Leinster. And you know, Gus McCarthy, the hooker, is a really exciting talent. You've got Charlie Tector, who you know, Kilkenny kid, had been playing more 10, but now with Sam Prendergast, who's starting tomorrow night, he's moved to 12, where he's played alongside Gary Ringrose. You know, it's just there's a nice, exciting look to it, and that's always fascinating to follow. And who of these players can become Champions Cup players for Leinster? And if you become Champions Cup players for Leinster, logic would tell you that they'll be very close to playing for Ireland quite quickly, because Leinster produces only players for Ireland. So it's yeah, there's lots of different reasons to be excited about the start of the URC. Having said that, it was an incredibly long season last year. And obviously finished on a high for Ireland with a win in South Africa. But I think the season starting a little bit later in September has given us a bit of a break. And I think rugby fans are starting to get excited again about some quality rugby. Hopefully it's going to start this weekend.
Yeah, no, very much so. It all kicks off on Friday, 7:35. Leinster away to Edinburgh. Cardiff Zebre is also on Friday evening. Munster Connacht, 5:30 on Saturday. Also on Saturday, 7:45 for Ulster hosting Glasgow as well. So we're kind of in win-or-bust territory for Leinster. You mentioned the off-season aggression in their recruitment, and Ulster have a lot of young players and be blending in. It'd be interesting to see how Richie Murphy handles a full season, as you said as well. For Munster and Connacht then, what would their respective aims and expectations be for this upcoming season, and where they might finish in the URC?
Yeah, look, I think Munster will want to win it again and be at least semi-finalists in Europe. You know, they won it probably by surprise, or maybe a season earlier than expected 2 years ago. And last year, having put themselves in a position where they had a home semi-final against Glasgow, you know, they would have felt that they were in a pole position to go and go back-to-back. Obviously, they got caught by Glasgow and ended up with nothing. But I think when they look around and they say, you know, they see the coaching staff that have got, it'll be their third season together, some young players who've come through their system. The academy is in a much better place now, thanks to you know the work that's gone in there. Gerald Prendergast has come in, and you know has kind of he understood the club game, and they've kind of got their way of doing it, which has to be different than the other provinces. But I think that's starting to pay dividends. You know, they obviously have lost RG Snyman, but John Klein is coming back from injury. They lost Joey Carberry, but they signed Billy Burns, and unfortunately Joey had such a difficult time with injury that he never really got to do for Munster what his talent you know, probably merited. But Billy Billy has been very good injury profile wise, and there was a lot of pressure on Jack Crowley last year to play pretty much every game or as many minutes of games as was possible. And I think that he'll be even better for having somebody to share that workload. They may end up playing a little bit together at 10-12 because Jack is so versatile. They've signed Dermot Kilcannon from Connacht, very, very good winger. Abrahams from Lyon in France, a South African, who's a back three player, very exciting. So they've kind of recruited well without having open the checkbook because they don't have the same funds as Leinster. So for me, Munster be expecting to targeting to win it. Connacht missed out on the Champions Cup for this season, and I think that's the logical next step for them. They've lost a lot of experienced players, but as I said, there's some good lads coming through, and they have likes of Mac and Santi back. who missed effectively, you know, well, Sandy missed the whole season, and Mac Hansen missed from January. So that would be like two new recruits for them, so, and two quality players. So for them, I would say get into the playoffs, qualify for Europe, Champions Cup again, and if they both do that, I think they both look back at the season as being a success.
Okay, great stuff, Brendan Jackman. Thank you as always for joining us. Just to mention, you can watch Munster Connacht in the URC on Saturday from 5 o'clock on RT2 and the RT Player. Follow a live blog on the RT Sport website and keep up to date on Saturday Sport on RTE Radio 1. We're taking a short break, then we're chatting Association Football in the company of Paul Corrie and Rebecca Cray.
Game on. Football.
Hey, you're very welcome back to Game On. Paul Corrie and Rebecca Cray are with us to chat football to keep you up to date on the ongoing Champions League matches. It is approaching half-time in the early kick-offs. Benfica lead 2-0 away to Red Star Belgrade, and Bayer Leverkusen are leading 4-0 away to Feyenoord. And Rebecca Cray and Paul Corrie have no time for the Feyenoord goalkeeper after how the fourth goal was conceded.
Howler.
It was free kick in, played across. Keeper was under pressure from his defender and fumbled it. I don't think you're agreeing with the under pressure from his defender.
Yeah, really nice, Shane.
No.
The only positive about it is he's the Finnish goalkeeper, so we'll be seeing him at Lansdowne Road fairly soon.
Happy days. That is Timon Wellenreuther.
Oh no, I've got that wrong. Oh. The Finnish keeper plays for Leverkusen.
Cool.
Live radio, Paul Corrie.
At least keeping a clean sheet.
Hradecky. I think he played in lower leagues in England, actually. We're going down wormholes here. Are you enjoying the Champions League phase, Paul Corrie, and its new... It's hard to... I suppose we're... What, match day three, week one, as such.
Well, there's plenty of football to watch.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
Well, I like it. I love watching any game. I
mean, it can be too much, and I said it nearly sincerely, that it's just there's so much on. I know we're in the Champions League game week as well, and I suppose you have the extra highlights and everything else.
I get what you mean. You can get sort of lost with where you're at with the competition, but I enjoy it anyway. It's probably not for everyone, but yeah, it's probably going to be one of those situations that you won't really know how you feel about it until we're probably a couple of weeks into it. I do think it favours the big sides, the fact that you play eight games, it spread the risks over eight as opposed to six games. And you could see that in some of the results last night, like Paris Saint-Germain were okay. I thought Man City were probably a little off, albeit Inter Milan were extremely well-disciplined and well-organised. But yeah, I still think you'll end up with the same top teams qualifying, particularly in those top eight positions. And you would imagine that you'll see the same sort of faces in the last eight and the last four.
Celtic, the second best team in the Champions League at the moment, not taking into account this evening's results. Can they keep up this amazing run of form? 5-1, I say, with a bit tongue-in-cheek, but on a sincere note, Liam Scales and Adam Eda scoring the Champions League, that's not to be sniffed at.
No, absolutely not. It was fantastic to see from an Irish perspective that the two lads were on the score sheet. I mean, Liam Scales took man of the match as well, so it was a real stellar performance from his perspective. It's a game that you would expect Celtic to win. Slovan Bratislava are the lowest ranked team in the Champions League this year, so very important that they got off to a winning start, and I believe the first time they've ever won their first game in the Champions League group stage. So Brendan Rodgers will be absolutely delighted with it. Heard in his interviews he was very pleased with how ruthless the team were. They kept going and were very, I guess, you know, motivated to score more goals, but
they didn't take the foot off the pedal, really. You know?
Yeah, they did. They have two difficult games to come. They play Dortmund away, and then they play Atalanta away. But their home fixtures are actually ones where they can get points. They play Leipzig at home, Club Brugge at home, Dynamo Zagreb then away, and Young Boys at home. So they're fixtures that you could see Celtic doing well in, Shane, and particularly given the new format, like the top eight teams go automatically into the last 16, and then 9 to 24
it's
go
a
into a playoff round. Yeah. So I could definitely see them reaching that end of the tournament if they are to keep, I guess, their key players fit and maintain the level of form that they've shown in pre-season and in domestic competitions.
You mentioned Manchester City frustrated by Inter Milan. Is the more standout from that just how well organised Inter were as opposed to City being a bit off it?
Yeah, and this probably goes back to when they played each other in the Champions League final. I think a lot of people were probably suspecting that Man City would steamroll Inter Milan, but Inter Milan are the top team in domestic Italian football at this moment in time. Like, Juventus obviously had their spell. AC Milan won a league title in recent years, but Inter Milan are the top side, and that was very evident last night in how they played. They were so disciplined, typical sort of Italian setup, very, very difficult to break down. And for a rare sort of occasion, you saw Man City maybe hesitating in the final third or not being able to come up with the answers when they so often do. Now, don't get me wrong, they had chances. Gundogan had two fantastic chances late on in the game, two headers, probably should have done better but one of them, but Inter Milan had their chances as well. And they're certainly a side chain. As this competition goes deep, they'll be very, very difficult to stop. They've got good players, the likes of Barella, Bastoni, good Italian influence, and then they've the likes of Thuram at the top end of the pitch can certainly pose a threat. So they will be a side that will go deep in this competition. And for both of the teams, I mean, not losing was probably the main aim of last night. Man City would always fancy at home. They have a big game against Arsenal on the weekend. Inter Milan play AC Milan this weekend as well. So maybe both sides had one eye on the weekend. But a point that I'm sure both managers won't be too disappointed about.
51552 is the text number. Delighted for the Irish lads last night. Astonishing that Scales didn't play a minute for Ireland in the recent games.
That's Garrett, a very good point.
From Armagh, which
that,
is...
That is a very good point. It was, I thought, wrong that he didn't start in either one of those games. Like, Robbie Brady is playing at Preston North End at the moment. Liam Scales did a really good job when he was at Shamrock Rovers playing as a left wing back. He can slot into that position. It's not foreign to him. He absolutely should be playing. Like, we don't have too many players playing Champions League football every week. Liam Scales has done very well since he's gone into Celtic. Had to go out on loan, but since Brendan Rodgers came back in, he's put a lot of faith in him. And he is somebody who should be starting for our national side.
Here's hoping he might get a bit of game time in the upcoming international window. Briefly, before we move on to the FAI Cup and the WSL, you mentioned the strength of Italian football with Inter. Arsenal travelling to Atalanta. Will they come away with a decent result from an Arsenal point of view, or how do you see this one playing out?
Good question. I mean, we saw quite a bit of Atalanta last season, knocking Liverpool out, and quite convincingly as well in that manner. They got a really good result at Anfield, if I recollect, in the first leg, and very good in the second leg. And obviously the final was played in Dublin, where Adamel Lookman was on fire that night. He was absolutely superb, and they were underdogs heading into that game against Bayern Leverkusen. It's about, I guess, whether or not they can sustain it. I believe it's the first Champions League game in their newly developed stadium. They had to play behind closed doors, and then they played in San Siro. So you can imagine the sort of atmosphere that will greet Arsenal as they head to Bergamo tonight. But I guess if Arsenal are realistic about going deep in these competitions and building on the success, maybe not from a trophy perspective, but from a results perspective in recent years, these are the type of games that you would expect them at least not to lose and potentially to win. They're still without Martin Odegaard, which is a huge loss. Mentioned that last week. You know, just his ability to knit the game and just connect the dots and supply the front three with chances is such a huge loss. You could see it on the weekend when they beat Tottenham. They just didn't have that same sort of creativity going forward, but he is a huge loss for them. But still, I mean, Arsenal keep a lot of clean sheets. Saliba and Gabriel look fantastic at the back. You would hope, from an Arsenal fan's perspective, that there should be enough at the top end of the pitch to create enough chances and score goals.
Okay, good stuff. Just to mention, Evan Ferguson returned to the Brighton starting lineup for the first time since March as they overcame Wolves in the League Cup last night. 3-2, Ferguson played an hour. Matt Doherty actually got an assist as well in that match. Rebecca Cray, we have two Women's FAI Cup semi-finals this weekend. Saturday, 2 o'clock, Shells host Cork City. Sunday, 3 p.m, Athlone travel to Sligo. Let us begin chronologically with Saturday. No Pearl Slattery, Shells captain, is suspended for this one. How big a blow, and how will Shells rejig in that regard at home to Cork?
Yeah, massive blow, obviously. You know, Pearl being Pearl, she's been a stalwart in the side the last few years, and obviously being captain as well. Unfortunately, got the sending off in the previous round. But look, there's a wealth of players in that squad that can slot right in there. You know, you've Maggie Pearce, we've got a young Nia Hannan, an upcoming centre half as well. So look, it won't be something that the lads be too worried about at Shells. But yeah, look, it's obviously a blow as well.
How big of an opportunity is this for Cork? 8 in the league as well, in a cup semi-final. Like, it's almost a free hit in one way, but also the opportunity to get to Tallaght Stadium playing a cup final is amazing.
Yeah, I think Danny Murphy was saying during the week it's a crucial game for them, nearly a season defining one. You know, they've not done too bad, I suppose, given the previous seasons they've had. Some great young players in the squad there. Obviously, Eva Mangan and Neve Cotter has done really well this year. Orla O'Mahony as well. So look, they'll be coming out all guns blazing. You know, I'm sure they'll have a travelling group as well of supporters to come up to Tolka. So look, it's going to be a great spectacle, I suppose, for the neutral as well. FAI Cup games are always that way. You know, the way they're set up. But yeah, they'd be definitely coming out to prove a point that, look, they can compete in this. And obviously, they've won it in recent years as well. Obviously, it might be in a different group, yeah, but still have a good core group that are still there and will be looking to put up the shells.
Okay, that one, as I mentioned, Tolka Park, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock then in the showground, Sligo, bottom of the table. We speak of, or we hint at, free hits going up against league leaders Athlone. They're going to have their work cut out, but it is in Sligo. This is the cup. Anything can happen. It's a cup semi-final. What's going to be decisive, though, primarily in deciding this one, do you feel?
Yeah, look, it's a major. It's obviously one for Sligo. Tommy Hewitt coming up against his old side as well in that loan. I'm sure he'll have a few cards in his back pocket. He'll know a lot of those players and how they set up and their approach to the game. And obviously, Athlone are slightly debilitated in losing three players in recent weeks as well. So look, Sligo, it's a case of, you know, they've nothing to lose now. Just go out and give it their all. Again, they've got a great fan base there that they come out, you know, every single week that they play down there. Emma Hansbury is involved with Sligo, who is going in the league now for a long time. You know, started out at Castlebar Celtic. You've also got the likes of the Lockery sisters, and one of them actually done her ACL recently, but they still have got that young kind of talent coming through. Really dogged, you know, really fearless in their approach to games, and I guarantee they'll be putting it up to Athlone. But Athlone, I think, will be all guns blazing as well, you know, coming into this. They'll be looking to get to that final and trying to, I suppose, maintain the win that they had last year.
Yeah, from a Shells and indeed an Athlone perspective, before we move on to WSL, wins here getting into a cup final then might translate into that league run in as well.
Exactly, it's going to be an exciting 2-3 weeks now, you know, coming up. Obviously, this could be a trilogy final as well, given the Shells and Athlone have come up against each other in the last 2 years as well. So look, all to play for the four teams. The FA Cup, I think, is one that everyone looks to, you know, at the start of the season, when the fixtures are going to be, or, you know, when the draw is going to be. So look, it's a great run in that we have to come, and look, you really can call it. I know people are probably looking at it going, it's going to be a Shells Athlone one, but these FA Cups throw up curveballs every single year.
Indeed they do. Plenty of curveballs coming the WSL. There are 13 Irish players currently on the books at Women's Super League clubs, three of them at newly promoted Crystal Palace. Abby Larkin, Hayley Nolan, Izzy Atkinson. Making the leap from the League of Ireland to the top tier in England is, of course, the dream for a lot of players, but it's never been harder to do it. And that's a paragraph from Anthony Pine, who's a brilliant write-up on the RT Sport website, I must say, as well. I do just kind of want to briefly get your overview on the WSL this weekend in terms of the big matches. But Brexit, meaning Irish players can't make the move until they're 18, and it keeps the talent in the domestic league for a bit longer. It also puts pressure on League of Ireland clubs, and now the Emerging Talent Programme has been disbanded as well. Positive to see the young players in the League of Ireland, but frustrating as well, I'd imagine, if you're a young player coming up, that you might have to stay at home instead of going over. Or how do you see it?
Yeah, like, it is quite frustrating. You mentioned the Emerging Talent Programme, you know, just being disintegrated. It's a case that, looking at those, the list of girls that are in the English league right now, the majority of them came through those programmes and you know, those setups throughout the country, obviously centralising the players that are in those regions as well, and given that, I suppose, glimpse of what professional football is all about, you know, the setups, the thing, all that kind of stuff. And it is obviously disheartening to see it go, and you're kind of thinking now, what's the plan going forward? I don't think anyone really knows. As we said, you know, in recent years, if Jesse Stapleton's gone across the water there, Tyler Toland is captain at Blackburn, not to mention obviously the usuals and Katie McCabe and Jess Sue and Courtney Brosnan, all these kind of players. But yeah, look, it's obviously gained a lot of popularity in the WSL in the recent years with the Euros win at with England. You've got a lot of people taking chance on women's football now. You know, Michelle Kang at London City Lionesses has invested massively in facilities, you know, state-of-the-art stadium, bringing players in like, you know, Aslani, who probably wouldn't have even been considered, you know, London City up until this year. So I think it's great on one end of the scale in terms of the WSL, but yeah, in terms of League of Ireland, it's not too good.
Yeah, even in the Championship down, you've the likes of Chloe Mustaki, Little John, Jamie Finn, Lily Ag, Erin McLaughlin with Pompey as well. But just on this weekend then, in the WSL, Arsenal, Manchester City, probably the standout fixture. It all begins tomorrow evening, Chelsea Villa in Kings Meadow Stadium at 7 o'clock. United host West Ham. That is Manchester United, Brighton against Everton on Saturday. Then Sunday, Liverpool, Leicester, Spurs, Palace, and as I mentioned, Arsenal City, probably the standout tie. I do want, like, a lot of talk around Katie McCabe, obviously one of Ireland's greatest ever players, and Arsenal Champions League runs, but Tara O'Hanlon, this could be a massive year for someone who's already being earmarked as perhaps the next level of player of a Katie or a Denise O'Sullivan.
Yeah, I think in recent times, she's probably the one player that stood out to me. I know we've had a few girls go across in the last few years, but Tara is definitely, you know, levels above. If she stays injury free, I can see her going to those heights of the Katie McCabe's and the Denise O'Sullivan's. Really good head on her shoulders for such a young player, you know, as an attacking wing back, really good left foot in her as well. So she's all the hallmarks to be the next Katie McCabe. You don't want to put that pressure on someone so young either. But, you know, look, she's had a bad run of injuries in the last 2 years or so since leaving Piemont. But look, she's in a great club now. State-of-the-art medical team there that obviously are looking after her. And I'd love to see her now in this season, you know, come true and make a name for herself and hopefully stay there. Will she go out on loan at some point? Who knows? But look, it happened Katie, you know, she went to Glasgow for a period of time. It's probably the best thing that ever happened to her, but she's definitely going to be one to watch, Tara. Yeah.
Great stuff. Just to mention, well, there's one League of Ireland fixture as well. Shamrock Rovers host DLR Waves on Saturday at 4 o'clock in Tallaght Stadium. For now, Rebecca, Paul, thank you both very much. We're taking a short ad break, then we're going to dial into Jeff Shepherd, who has his eye on America, and we'll hopefully bring you some team news from Atlanta Arsenal.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, with our eye on America, Jeff Shepherd is on the line. Jeff, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Shane. How are you doing tonight?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Thank you, as always, for joining us of a Thursday evening. Listen, it's always fun when you get to mix a bit of pleasure and work, and it's always pleasure and work when I chat to you, Shep. However, we can even go one step further because your beloved New Orleans Saints, they are flying at the moment.
Yeah, really kind of shattering all preseason predictions for what was expected out of this team. And let's just, I mean, I'll be honest with you, even my own. You know, I felt like they could win week one against Carolina because they're probably the worst team in the league, and we're going to get to them in a moment. But week two, you know, going into Dallas, and then week three, you're hosting the Philadelphia Eagles, you're thinking, all right, you know, we're lucky we'll be 2-1 coming out of this, you know, if we're really lucky. And the Saints just went into Dallas last Sunday, and from the opening coin toss, just, I mean, it, you know, I like to joke, they won the opening coin toss and elected to beat the hell out of the Cowboys, you know? 48-19 was the final score. I think they scored on their first 5 or 6 possessions of the game. They scored on, like, I think on the first 13 possessions of the season, just something unbelievable. Just, you know, the offense is just flying high, and you know, Dallas kind of shaking to its core is like, oh goodness, they're already in, you know, playoff mode, which is not good for Dallas. And the Saints 2-0, now they're going to host the Eagles, who lost to the Falcons on Monday night and are without their best receiver. So kind of catching them in a good moment as well. But, you know, I'll be heading over to the game on Sunday, and it's really all anybody in my world is talking about right now is the Saints, which is just fun. You know, it's just, it's fun when your team is good. It turns out, Shane.
Who knew? Who knew?
Yeah, right.
Listen, there has been great drama in the opening 2 weekends of the season already, and we will get into a few talking points. But you mentioned actually Carolina there, and the benching of last year's number one overall pick, Bryce Young. Talk to me about this. This is outstanding stuff. Amazing.
Yeah, so look, they were 0-2 to start the season. They lost to the Saints, and they lost to the Chargers this past weekend. He's not been good. I think his quarterback rating is I think it's the worst in the history of the league after 2 games. He doesn't have a lot of help. And he has no real support there. And they decided, look, after the game, the coach said, you know, he's still the guy. And then on Monday, they announced that they were going to bench him in favor of Andy Dalton, who was a former starter for the Cincinnati Bengals and has been a backup the last couple of seasons. And to put this in context, Shane, you know, 2 years ago, right before the 2023 NFL draft, I should say, the Panthers traded away their number one pick in the first round to move up to get to the Chicago Bears. So they traded, you know, they switched spots, and there were a couple of other picks in the 2023 draft. And then they gave up their number one slot this year, which turned out to be the number one overall pick again. So that's how the Bears drafted Caleb Williams. And then their second round pick next year. Now look, Bryce Young could come back. I mean, there's not to say anything about the fact that he's done. I mean, by no means is he done. But right now, after I think 17 or 18 games, he's got 2 wins. You know, it's been an unmitigated disaster. But again, it's not all on him. Their defense is atrocious. I mean, they probably have the worst defense in the league. But unfortunately, when it comes to the quarterback position, Shane, you know, you get way too much of the credit and you get way too much of the blame. And a lot of that has to do with the salaries that these guys make. But right now, as of this moment, the number one pick in the 2023 NFL draft is not a starting quarterback in the league. And it's just really hard for a franchise to recover from something like that. That typically takes a season or two at the most, you know, at the least, to come back from that.
That is incredible. Amazingly disastrous, really, for both Bryce Young and Carolina. So that is unfortunate. The Chiefs, they're finding ways to win.
Yeah. I mean, just when you think they're down, you know, look, Travis Kelce through two games has really not done anything like we're typically used to seeing Travis Kelce do. Not a lot of catches. They lose Isaiah Pacheco, their running back, this past week. So they're going to kind of go running back by committee. Their defense has been fine. Their defense is kind of keeping them in games. They, you know, they were able to hold off the Ravens in week one when Lamar Jackson ran all over the place. Last week, they played the Bengals, and Joe Burrow and the Bengals always play the Chiefs tough, even in Arrowhead Stadium, you know, in Kansas City. But they were able to hold on to it and get another win, and so they're 2-0. And it's just, you know, Shane, we talk about this, and it's like we have to remember that we have to keep relearning this lesson. Why would you ever think Patrick Mahomes would be down and out? Or why would you not bet on Patrick Mahomes to get the win? You know, I mean, they had no reason winning that Super Bowl last year, and they did it. You know, they could easily be 0-2. I mean, they're 2-3 plays away from being 0-2 this year, yet here they sit at 2-0 in the driver's seat in their division, just exactly where we thought they would be. And, you know, it's just kind of ho-hum.
Mm. Listen, there's so many avenues that we could go down and explore from the opening two game weeks. But just for yourself, Shep, what's caught your eye? What stood out most for you?
It's been a weird kind of start to the season for the quarterbacks. There's not been a ton of, like, you know, the Jared Goff at Detroit, Matthew Stafford in Los Angeles have both kind of not been playing well. Detroit, you know, barely 1-1. I mean, they got beat pretty badly last week by the Buccaneers. Kyler Murray has kind of come back right into form. It was interesting, Shane, you know, the top receiver taken last year was Marvin Harrison Jr., and he was very limited on the targets in week one. And Kyler Murray was like, you know, we didn't really play a lot in the preseason together. We don't kind of like, you know, we don't really have a lot of chemistry. And Harrison had two touchdown catches and like 120-something yards last week. So they quickly got into, you know, stride with each other. I think Arizona's going to surprise some people. The Tua Tagovailoa situation, you know, he got knocked out of the game last Thursday against the Bills. At the minimum, it's his third concussion, really, that we know about. I'm sure I'm forgetting some, unfortunately. That's going to be an interesting situation to see what can and what will the league do moving forward with Tua. I don't think anybody wants to see him back out on the field anytime soon. And there's a lot of people who probably don't want to ever see him out on the field ever again because, you know, of what's happened with him with these concussions. It looked pretty serious the other night. So he's been placed on IR. And speaking of IR, you know, Christian McCaffrey hasn't started the season for San Francisco. So there's been some major injuries to some key players. You know, it's a physical game. And, you know, each week, you know, you're running the risk, you know, of having one of your star players. And it's kind of almost like the healthiest, you know, whoever's the healthiest last can have the best record, you know, heading into the playoffs. But, you know, Tua and Christian McCaffrey, I mean, those are some really, really big names that are out already for multiple weeks.
Yeah, not always the most popular decision, but always good to err on the side of caution, particularly when it comes to such serious injuries that could have long, long-lasting effects. And the New York Giants, it's been a difficult start to the season and disappointing news from an Irish angle for Derry's Jude McInthamney.
Yeah, so it doesn't look like he's going to make the roster. And look, I'll just say this. He may be dodging a bullet. Look, I get it that, you know, we want one of these guys to get on the roster somewhere. But the Giants are woeful. And again, look, I think it has a lot. It's a similar situation to what kind of Charlie Smith was going through in New Orleans, is that you're getting exposure no matter what. And look, it's hard to wait, especially nowadays, you know, with I want everything right now and you know, lack of, you know, just lack of being able to just keep your mind focused on anything. But getting the exposure at this level, people always need kickers. It always happens. Somebody gets hurt, somebody goes on a cold streak, You know, so it's just, as long as you're getting that exposure, it could pay off in the end. And, you know, I'm not going to be surprised when one of these guys makes a roster, because they clearly, they have the legs, they can do it. It's just they need to land in the right opportunity.
Here's hoping. You mentioned it could be a case of dodging a bullet. Pressure mounting on the Giants and their head coach?
I think so, yeah. I mean, look, they made the playoffs a couple of years ago kind of as a fluke. In Brian Daboll's first season. And look, they're in New York, so they were getting all the media love and all the media attention. But they've been very bad ever since then. They're lost at quarterback with Daniel Jones. They lose Saquon Barkley to the Philadelphia Eagles, and he has 3 touchdowns on opening night. There's just not a lot going on. I mean, they lose this past week to, you know, the Commanders, who have a rookie quarterback as well. There's not a lot of, in my mind, there's not a lot of hope in New York. And that's a place that doesn't, you know, kind of stomach losing for a very long time. And they've been losing really for the last year and a half every time they've gone out onto the field. So, they need to get something turned around here pretty quickly, or it's going to get real loud real quick.
Okay. Before I let you go, Shep, I'm not finishing or refusing to finish on the Giants. We're going to finish on the Jets, you know, because that's just how we roll.
Sure.
The return of the prodigal son, Aaron Rodgers, full home debut after missing the entire season after just 4 offensive snaps last year. It's going well. It's going to go well, isn't it? Reassure me here.
I would, sure, yeah. I mean, look, they're playing the Patriots. The Patriots are a little bit better than I think people thought they were going to be to start the season. The Jets didn't play well on opening Monday night against San Francisco in San Francisco. Nobody ever really plays well out there. Then they went to Tennessee last week and got a win. I think, you know, they're coming home tonight. They're going to take on their division rivals. I'm not anticipating some giant shootout. I mean, both of these teams' defenses are playing well. The weapons that the Jets have are better than the weapons that the Patriots have. So just on paper, you know, they should win this game. But, I mean, I think something, you know, in the 24-17 type range is what you're looking at. And you know what? It doesn't matter. All you need is to win by 1 point, Shane. You're learning this. Every week, it's a battle. Every week. And it very rarely goes the way it's supposed to go. I mean, I was stunned that the Packers beat the Colts last week, you know, with Malik Willis playing quarterback. Anything can happen. So I just think it's going to be a good one to watch. It's an old-school AFC East showdown. And you know, these teams don't like each other. The fans don't like each other. I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I do think the Jets will hold on and get the win.
Happy days. On that positive note, we'll leave it there. Jeff Shepherd, gentlemen, as always, great chatting.
Game on.
Eye on America.
That is all we have time for this evening's show. The one and only Dermot O'Brien is up next with the new music show, so don't go anywhere. Game on is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. Oisin Coyne shall chat to you then.
RTE 2FM.